Hello and welcome to the 2019 version of the FWFB Team Preview Podcast. We're looking at the Detroit Tigers today. And with me is the illustrious Ben Brennis.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Not too bad. And yourself?
I'm good.
Want to let everyone know where you can be found on Twitter?
Yes, I can be found at B Brennis FWFB, and I do apologize in advance if I sound under the weather.
And you can find me at Andrew K. Dewhurst. So we're going to kick things off, and we're going to try to keep this as short and sweet as possible, as the Detroit Tigers are probably among the most fantasy irrelevant teams moving into 2019. So we're going to start in the infield. I think probably the biggest name sitting in the infield is still Miguel Cabrera. How do you feel about Cabrera's outlook coming into 2019, Ben?
Cabrera is someone who obviously you're going to want to try to get if you are looking for a corner infielder if you're in closer to a standard type league. If you're in a 15-team league, he could be a borderline first baseman. He still has the skills to be good, other than the fact that he's been injured each of the past 2 years, which is something you hadn't seen up until 2 years ago. If he's in an OBP league, he still takes a ton of walks. Last year, even though he only had 134 at-bats, he had a .299 average. So he still understands how to put the bound ball and how to get on base. You know you're not getting stolen bases from him, and if he's not hitting home runs, there's not a lot of other fantasy output that he's going to give you because the lineup around him isn't as good. So the runs are going to be a depleted number and the RBIs are going to be a depleted number. So he can be useful, but he can't be relied upon as one of your top sources of fantasy output.
Yeah, personally, having looked at the steamer projections and the depth charts projections, if you can get Miguel Cabrera at the 150 to 200 range where he's going to be your corner infielder spot, I think you've got some room for this to be a real steal. I mean, he's still projected for 26 home runs, 84 runs, 90 RBIs. He's still going to hit, as we saw last year, he still hit .299, still takes a healthy amount of walks. So he's a player that does come with some risk, but has some upside. And even in the counting categories, we've seen even on a bad Tigers team, guys like Nick Castellanos have still been able to produce runs and RBIs. So I think there's still some hope there for Cabrera to be fantasy relevant and hopefully, somewhat fantasy useful in 2019, provided he can stay healthy.
Yeah, that's the big key, is that if he doesn't stay healthy, then you know that you're not going to get as much from him. And while those steamer projections can be nice for someone who's between pick 150 and 200, you also have to expect that there's a just as good of a chance that he could easily miss 90 games this year, because you wouldn't have thought that 2 years ago. But now, with the last couple of years, it seems more likely that at almost 36 years old, that he's more likely going to be hurt at some point during the season and miss some time than him staying healthy for the entire year and being able to hit those steamer projections.
For sure. And I guess I see it as, if you're going to take a risk on a guy, there's some value to that risk, especially inside of, where you're looking at getting him this year. So, moving on, other guys I think that are worth talking about in this infield. I think you can look at guys like Nico Goodrum. Goodrum was a little bit of a surprise in 2018. Gave you a 16-12 year, which was nice to have in an AL only, nice to have in a 15-team mix. Do you see much? Do you see Goodrum putting out much more than that in 2019?
I don't see him putting out much more, but I do see him being able to put up some similar stats. And because you have position flexibility with him, because depending on the format you're in, he may have been able to play multiple positions. You know, in ESPN last year, he was at second, first, third, short, and outfield. He's not going to carry all those over this year, but he has the ability to cover over a couple, carry over a couple of them. So you do know that he's going to have flexibility, kind of like what a Marwin Gonzalez had. Well, coming into last year, he knew he wasn't going to put up those same numbers, but if he's able to put up even 70% of what he had, given the ability to move him around every day, it's useful. I think that if he's able to put up double-digit steals and mid-teens home runs, then he's at least going to be a useful back-end type piece who could be a utility-type player for you or an injury replacement. It would be nice if he was able to hit the ball with a better average, but if he's able to at least provide you some home runs and steals, I don't think you can really ask for much more than that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think at the end of the day, if you end up somewhere close to a 2010 season from him, you're probably not going to complain.
No, unless he's hitting – I mean, even if he's hitting 200, you can't really complain because there's not going to be a lot of 200 hitters that are getting 10 steals while hitting 20 home runs. Yeah, he'll kill you, but if you plan accordingly that you know that you have other players that are able to hit for average before you draft him, considering that he's not going to be drafted as early as some of the other players who would be able to put up 20 home runs or 10 steals, you should be able to provide your lineup with enough good, quote-unquote, average players to be able to offset it. And if you don't, then he may be someone that you look to move early enough to someone who may need it so that you don't completely tank that stat.
For sure. Do you see him being anything much more to bench bat, though, this year? Or could you see yourself having him as a regular in your lineup?
It's going to be dependent on the league size. I think anything over 14 teams, you have the ability to use him as a regular player. I think anything under that, there's just too many players out there that can kind of do something similar to what he can that are on likely better teams that are probably going to be in better lineup slots that he could be someone that you could use, but more often than not, he's probably not going to be anything more than an injury replacement. But like I said, anything over 14 teams, I think you have the ability to use him every day as either a middle infielder or a utility-type player. He's probably not going to be used as a corner, and he's unlikely to be used as an outfielder. I think there's just too many good players to be able to plug in there unless, like I said, someone's hurt.
Fair enough. Moving on, Jamer Candelario. I believe, you know, it was Colin who called him mini Manny Machado, which is probably a little bit of a stretch, but what do you think of Candelario for 2019?
Well, I think if he's a mini Manny Machado, that means he's probably going to get, what, a $200 million contract?
Maybe 170.
Okay. He's the player that I'm actually most excited about in the infield, which is kind of saying something because I'm not super high on him in general. But I like what I expect from him given health and given the lineup. I like him more than anyone else in this infield. I would love to be able to see him hit 260. I don't think that it would be hard for him to improve on the 224 they hit last year. I think a couple of balls bouncing his way, a little bit more patience at the plate, and I think he could get there because he has the ability to hit for power. He hit 19 home runs last year. He can score runs. He had 78 last year, and that was with basically no good players in the lineup for the last two-thirds of the season, it felt like. It would be nice to see him actually get some RBI increase, but I think if he's able to increase that batting average 36 points, you could see that 54 RBIs maybe going up to closer to 70, if not more, if there's players on base in front of him. I think three steals is roughly what you can expect. If you got anything more than five, I think you're looking at yourself and saying, wow, I didn't draft him for steals, but I got some cheap ones, kind of like what you do with Yadier Molina every so often.
Yeah, the biggest issue I think I have with Candelario is that if he only hits you 20 home runs, it's probably not getting it done at a corner infield spot for you. So you're not really going to want to draft him at third. You can use him in a corner, but I think he's probably most likely going to be an injury fill-in. And the reason why I have, you know, I'm less optimistic on that is, one, he does give you some power to the leadoff spot, but it's not a ton. Two, he is actually scheduled to lead off, which is saying something. So there is some run potential there, but you're not getting the steals. You're not going to get the RBIs out of that spot because, you know, the bottom of that lineup is going to be probably the worst, if not definitely among the five worst in baseball.
I was going to say you haven't met the Mets.
But there's just not a whole lot to love here. I mean, I guess if you end up waiting on third base and you miss out on the first 10 guys, maybe somebody you want to consider, because he is still only 25, so there is some upside that's there. And I suppose there is some opportunity for the Tigers to surprise, however, probably not too much. But, you know, that's how I see Candelario going into this year.
Do you really expect that he's going to lead off because they don't have any better options, and if they acquired one, they would slide him down to maybe the five hole? Or do you think that he's just there because they just have no one else?
I think he's there because they have no one else, and I don't see any reason for them to go and acquire something better, given that they're still, what, at least 5 years away from wanting to be a contender?
I mean, I could see that they would want what the Indians win those maybe another 3 years because of who they have. I don't expect that Kluber would still be there in 3 years. They could easily move on from Carrasco in that time. They could move on from Bauer in that time. The hitters on that team, yes, there's some good ones that are young, like Lindor, but at the same point in time, some of the other ones they have are a little bit older. So I would say 3 year window there. I'm not a big believer in the Twins, unfortunately. The Royals, not a believer in them either. And the White Sox could be up and coming in 3 years. So I could see that they are like, we can beat in 3 years' time. But at the same point in time, I could see them going out and trying to acquire someone who's maybe a little bit younger, who's been kind of cast aside, that's not as good. Obviously, like, one player I'm thinking of is like a Manny Margot type player who has kind of fallen out of favor, isn't someone that was expected or that people expected to be decent and hasn't really done anything. I mean, you could try to go to the Yankees, see if there's anyone that they want for Clint Frazier. He could be someone who could then play center field for you, which would be nice. He's got some speed. He could be someone who could lead off in some capacity. So, you know, someone like that is what I would have them try to consider doing, because I think that they have the ability to kind of pull something like that off.
Yeah, I just look at it and go, like, what are you going to have to give up to do that? You don't have a lot of major league pieces to move. I mean, I assume they're going to move Tyson Ross at some point this year if he performs. You know, if they get a bounce back from Matt Moore, they'll try to move him. But outside of moving Michael Fulmer, there's not any real pieces here to be moved to get younger and bring more prospects in. And yeah, top prospects right now are pitchers, so I don't see them, you know, wanting to move a Casey Mize or a Matt Manning or, you know, maybe Alex Fido, but
they could consider me moving, you know, if Gary Sanchez is really playing a poor catcher, I guess they could consider going for Jake Rogers, who could be up and is a pretty good defensive catcher and a average to below average offensive hitter, but he'll be younger than what they have in Romine. So I think that they could consider something like that. The other move that I wouldn't have an issue with them doing is bringing up Daz Cameron, because he is in AAA. I think that he's got enough speed and the ability to get on base. I think with a little bit of work, they could easily take him and put him in the leadoff spot. So they do have at least one internal option. I don't think it's a great one, but they do have at least one.
Yeah. I suppose the other player that I'm neglecting to speak of as one that can be moved for some values is Nick Castellanos is he's probably going to get moved this year, I would think. As they're going to have to move him while the price is high, as he doesn't seem interested in signing an extension, and I don't think anyone can really blame him for that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they have pitching up the wazoo in the minors, but they don't have really any hitting prospects. Their two best hitters in the minors are Daz Cameron and Jake Rogers. And Rogers is, like I said, average to below average as a hitter. So they don't have a lot in terms of reinforcements. So it is a little surprising. But Castellanos probably will fetch a decent price depending on where he goes. Because I think he's better suited for the American League. I don't think he can really – he can't play outfield, and he's not a good third baseman. So he's kind of either got to go to first and learn that, or he's got to be a DH.
I agree, yeah. He's going to end up – if he goes to the National League, he probably can't play anything outside of first base. Moving on, I'm just going to skim over these guys, and you just let me know if you have any thoughts on them. Grayson Griner's currently – going to be filling in, at least playing catcher, maybe keeping that spot warm for Jake Rogers. Not a lot, I think, to say about Griner. He's a defense-first guy, much like Rogers. So he's a guy I think they're hoping to develop at the major league level.
Yeah, he's going to be a low-end catcher, too, in basically all formats. And, you know, it's just because he's getting at-bats. He's not going to be able to produce anything offensively for you of any value. He's going to give you negative value overall. But it's sometimes having a negative value can help offset just putting up nothing if you have an injury.
Yeah. Jordy Mercer. I mean, not a whole lot to say about Jordy Mercer. He's really just – keeping a spot warm, I think, till Paredes is ready to come up. And even then, I think you could still see him split time with a guy like Ronnie Rodriguez.
He could be a useful fill-in in probably anything over 18 teams. Maybe 18 teams is where you have some value. I mean, he had 251 last year, 6 home runs. Not a lot of counting stats. You're not going to get a lot. You're going to have less than 10 home runs and stolen bases from him combined. So he's not going to give you a lot, but he's going to at least have at-bats. And he could chip in for average. He could hit 270 with maybe 50 runs and 50 RBIs, which is better than what you could get off of some waiver wires, depending on how deep your league is. He could be someone who could be used in a pinch situation if you have an injury.
Yeah. Again, not a guy you're looking too much for. John Hicks has been an interesting guy in the past. You know, he gained some value last year because he filled in quite a bit at first base when Cabrera went down, but he was still catcher eligible. Unfortunately, this year, he's lost that catcher eligibility and now is just first base eligible. So that really hurts his value right now. But I think he's a guy that you could keep an eye on if Cabrera goes down. He might see those at-bats come back. And I think he is probably going to be their backup catcher to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance that he has the third highest batting average on the team. So,
and there's also a chance that that's like 245.
Yeah.
I think Ronnie Rodriguez is probably the last guy to talk about here, which is saying something here. I mean, I don't have a whole lot of expectation for Rodriguez. He's a bit of an interesting guy in the sense that I think he could give you kind of what Nico Goodrum gave you last year. Probably going to only be giving you second base and shortstop eligible. He's a guy that was released by the Indians in the previous year and then found himself playing in the majors last year for the Tigers, which probably tells you almost all you need to know.
Yeah, and he only got 206 plate appearances last year, so he didn't even get a ton. I don't expect more than that or around that number this year. I understand he has a chance to fill in. I don't expect a major performance on the season from Ronnie Rodriguez.
Fair enough. So let's move on to the outfield. I think Castellanos is the probably the most exciting player here. Gave you, hit 23 home runs, 88 runs, 89 RBIs, hit 298 last year. Are you interested in getting Castellanos this year? What's your outlook for him?
I like Castellanos as a player, and I think that gives you good stats. The problem is last year he had an ADP of 85. I guess it depends on where his ADP is this year. Because if I'm drafting someone in the top 85 picks, and he's only giving me 23 home runs, he's giving me less than 90 runs and RBIs, he's not giving me steals, that means that his best tool for my team is either average to below average for home runs, given how many players actually hit a high amount of home runs now, or it's his average, which is fine, but at the same point in time, I can't just pick someone in top 85 picks solely based on their average. So I kind of need to see a little bit more. He's probably someone who I would take a little later in draft, even though I do like him. I think that the lineup around him is just so bad, and that there's a chance that he gets traded to a ballpark that doesn't have great power hitting ability for him, that it makes me a little wary to buy on him right now.
Yeah, my hope would be if I'm taking Castellanos at 85, I'm saying I think he's getting traded, and I think he's going to get traded. I mean, Comerica Park's not a great place to hit in, outside of down the left field line or the right field line rather. So it's kind of one that you look at and say like, okay, if he can land in a better spot, maybe he can push those home runs up to 30 and be much more useful. And I think if he landed in a better spot, you could also see the runs and RBIs push to 100 as well, in which you could, if he's 30 home runs, 300 average, 100 runs, 100 RBIs, you're getting what, top 20 player at pick 85.
Yeah.
But if you just get what you got last year, outside of being, a batting average stabilizer, and giving you kind of okay stat, obviously the runs and RBIs look nice, but I don't know if we can really set those in stone by any means. And 23 home runs on a corner on your outfield isn't terrible, but not really worth that draft price.
I agree. The question that I think is biggest around him is what team potentially could trade for him, because obviously there's not going to be a ton of teams that necessarily need an outfielder as of right now, and not a lot that have a DH, because I would have thought that they would have moved him at the winter meetings if they really had someone who wanted to buy in him at this current time, because you'd get the full season with him. So, yes, you could buy him at the deadline, but I'm thinking that someone at the deadline is either going to be a team that came out of nowhere last year, like the A's or the Rays, that people didn't really expect to compete. And if it's not one of those teams, that means there's an injury on one better team. And a lot of those teams do have some depth that they're able to work with, that I'm not sure if there's a ballpark that improves his power numbers.
I'll throw one out there as a spot and a situation that could happen, and I think that's actually in Philadelphia. So if the Phillies miss out on Harper, I could see them, if they wanted to still improve their outfield, going and putting a package together to get Castellanos. They're a team that's okay having players in the outfield that can't play outfield, as they already do it with Rhys Hoskins. And he would still be an upgrade over just about any player in their outfield.
I mean, right field is pretty weak for them, but what's to stop them from just going and signing AJ Pollock and then moving Odubel Herrera to right field and improving the outfield that way?
Money, I suppose. If they didn't want to spend the money, they'd rather give up the prospect depth, given Pollock's inability to stay healthy. Castellanos has proven that. He's younger, and he's probably going to give you more around just about everywhere else. So, and again, that's pure speculation. Injuries happen as well, which could determine landing spot. And really, the Tigers don't have to move him. I don't think he's a free agent until 2021 possibly. I think he's still in his arbitration years, so still lots of things that can happen there. moving forward, I'm going to jump down to Christian Stewart because I think he's probably the only guy really worth talking too much about in this outfield.
Yeah.
He's also going to probably DH quite a bit because, much like Castellanos, he's not a fantastic defender. What do you think of Stewart as a later round play this year?
I think that he's going to be someone who can give you some decent value. I think he's got some good pop. He gets on base, whether it's an OBP or an average league, so you do have some benefit there. I think that depending on where his lineup spot is, right now Russell Resource has him as a two-hitter. If he sees as a two-hitter, I think that he has the ability to put up a decent amount of runs, but you'd rather see him have some RBI opportunities as well, especially with Candelario being the leadoff hitter. He isn't necessarily the best table setter, so there's not going to be a ton of RBI opportunities. It's almost like they'd be better off with Castellanos leading off, given his ability to actually get on base. But at the same point in time, I think Stewart's going to be someone who can give you some good value as a late-round draft pick, and he has the ability to, in four outfield leagues or three outfield leagues that are deep enough, league size, I think he has the ability to become a starter during the season for you.
Yeah, I think that possibility is there. He's definitely a guy I'm going to be keeping my eye on to see what his actual OBP ends up being once we get into draft season. I think there's definitely 25 home runs in his future, hopefully more than that if the power continues to develop, as that's kind of been his carrying tool, is the power. So it's really going to kind of come down to what kind of value that is. And the only problem you're going to have probably moving forward with Stewart is if he doesn't get enough games in the outfield this year and he ends up DHing, which seems unlikely considering, you know, if Cabrera's healthy, they're going to want to probably DH Cabrera as much as they can. Yeah, I mean, Stewart's a guy probably that you're still a year or two away from, but could be a nice sleeper guy who could, you know, kind of under the radar give you 25 to 30 home runs if things go his way.
Yeah, I think that he's a solid player. I've liked his prospect rise over the last two seasons, and I think that he could be someone who is useful. I think that they'll plug him into left field on every day that they're trying to give Miggy Cabrera some time off, maybe every two out of every 3 days he plays the field, and then Miggy goes to DH, which puts Stewart in left field. I think that if he's able to do that, then, you know, through the first 2.5 months he'll gain the eligibility. So, but we'll see. I think he's probably the third best overall hitter on this lineup, which is saying something.
Fair enough. Last two outfielders, Mikey Matuk, Jacoby Jones. You like either of these guys? Have anything to add on them?
No, I mean, Jacoby Jones is someone who has the ability to hit for some power and get some steals, but that averages down into 207 mark. So it's similar to Nico. And I was saying, yes, you'll be able to find some use out of those type of numbers. But at the same point in time, it's going to end up being a bench/utility spot. You're not going to use him as the outfield. And right now, Jones is pegged as the nine-hitter. So if he stays down there, he's going to have only around 450 to 500 bats, more than likely, given how much you're actually going to turn this lineup over. So as a result, I'm not sure if you can rely on him as much as Nico.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think in the deepest of leagues, there could be some value in Jacoby Jones. He could give you 10 and 10, which is perfectly helpful in a 20-plus team league. Matuk was a pretty big disappointment last year. I think he was a guy that people thought you could get 20 steals from, and that just didn't materialize. Matuk, I think, was down in AAA by like June 1st, so... definitely these are a couple players I'm not drafting in 15 team leagues, and at best you're going to keep your eye on them to see if anything starts to materialize.
Yeah.
You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. All preseason long, we'll be bringing you the most in-depth analysis to get you ready for your drafts. There will be 30 team previews with 30 prospect previews during the month of January. That's 60 podcasts in 30 days. Then, we will be dropping almost daily pods until the start of the season. You can also get your 2019 draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit in ebook and paperback on Amazon.com. Or if you prefer, you can get it via email in PDF form. It has over 250 pages of analysis, player profiles, ranks, strategy guides, and prospect information for cheaper than the magazine you get in the store. Plus, we'll be updating both PDF and ebook all the way until draft season is over for any changes that happen in the landscape of fantasy baseball. Stay tuned all preseason long to Friends of Fantasy Benefits so you can be ahead of the curve.
Moving forward here, let's jump into this, into the pitchers. Michael Fulmer, he's the quote unquote ace of this staff. He's a, you know, former Met prospect, as I'm Fulmer really had a down year last year. ERA ballooned up to almost 5. WHIP jumped up to 1.31. Do you have much interest in drafting Fulmer this year?
If I'm drafting Fulmer, it's as my number 3 in a deep league and my number 5 if it's closer to standard. So he's not someone who I'm really looking to get, because he's just – while he's able to get strikeouts, this is not going to be a team that you want for wins. And if it's quality starts, he has shown some injuries, so you can't necessarily say, okay, I can guarantee that he's going to get you 6 strong innings every single time he goes out there. So he's someone that it's going to be tougher to rely on. I do like him, but if I'm going to pick someone from this rotation, I'm picking Matt Boyd over Michael Fulmer, because I just think that there's a better chance I'm going to get better numbers, more Ks, and more likely to get quality starts. So I don't think people would have been saying that a year ago, but here we are talking about Matt Boyd over Michael Fulmer.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone was talking about that a year ago. And I'm going to say this now, and I think it's going to be a blanket statement for all of the rest of these pitchers, is that it's going to be hard to own Tigers pitchers while their outfield features potentially Jacoby Jones with Nick Castellanos and Christian Stewart in the outfield, because their outfield defense is just going to be absolutely atrocious. And that's going to really kill the ERA and the WHIP of some of these pitchers, because if these guys are high fly ball rate, their gaps are big in Comerica Park, and they're getting bigger as with less athletic players out there. So yeah. I think I'm kind of on the same page. I'm okay with Fulmer in probably as your my 4 or 5, but I'm not. If you've got him as your 2, then I think you're gonna really be in trouble.
Yeah, my interest in the starting pitchers goes Boyd, Fulmer, Ross, and then that's it. I don't really have much of an interest in Zimmerman, and I don't have much of an interest in Matt Moore. I don't think that they strike people out enough. I don't think that they're going to have ERAs under 4.3. And I don't think that they're going to have a WHIP under 1.2. So if that's someone who helps you at the back end, because they can help stabilize a below average to average staff, then fine. But in a head-to-head, I'm not looking to use them, because they just aren't giving you 2 negative numbers. I'd rather have a relief pitcher of some nature give me less innings and give me better numbers than those 2 guys. And even with Tyson Ross, I think it's the same thing, but I think that there's a chance that Tyson Ross maybe gives you 175 to 180 innings with 150 to 60 Ks and could have the ERA around 4 to 4.1 with a WHIP of around 1.2. I think he has the ability to do that this year, because if he's pitching at home, at least maybe he has a chance to make some improvements.
Yeah, I guess as far as I see it, I don't think I'm far off. I mean, Matthew Boyd is going to largely, you're really saying something when he's your most valuable pitcher on this team, at least from a starter's perspective. He's a guile only type of guy. I mean, he provided some reasonable value last year, considering he was free. You're probably not getting him for free this year. I mean, one thing that is worth keeping in mind is that because this division is so terrible, somebody is probably going to luck into 10 wins.
He had nine last year, so there was a benefit there, and he had the highest K per nine of all the starters last year. So, I mean, sometimes the best of the bunch, even if it's bad, is still useful enough. So,
yeah. Tyson Ross, probably a late round flyer kind of guy. If he performs well, he's going to get shipped out. I think he's just on a 1 year deal this year.
He did say that last year, and he didn't get shipped, which surprised me a little bit. I mean, he got shipped, but he got like nothing in return, which I guess is better than legitimately nothing in return. But I thought he pitched well enough early on that he was going to get flipped and get something better than what he actually got. So I'm hopeful that this year, same thing happens, and he actually gets a decent return for him.
Yeah, and I think what I see the Tigers trying to do with Ross and probably a little bit with Matt Moore is hoping that they can catch lightning in a bottle a little bit, kind of like they did with Mike Fiers last year. Bring him in, hope they pitch well, get him out, get something in return because, you know, the farm system's still not really deep. And, you know, if you can flip these guys around for prospects every year, eventually you're going to hit on one of them. Jordan Zimmermann, not a lot to say. Really bad contract, makes him impossible to move. Not any value really left in him. His, you know, fastball continues to decline. Certainly a guy I'm staying away from, unless at best you're looking at getting him for a stream against the Royals or one of the other bad teams in this division. Same for Matt Moore. Matt Moore still proves he can't be healthy. I think kind of the injuries have ruined his career. I mean, if you're sporting a 7 ERA in the parks that he pitched in last year, I don't think you can expect much improvement from that.
And he had a 1.66 what also.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Tough to be successful when you're giving up pretty much two walks or hits per inning.
Yeah.
Moving into the bullpen, couple guys here that are mildly interesting. Shane Green provided actually fantastic value last year in spite of his 5.12 ERA because he still got you 32 saves and he cost you not a whole lot. I think the issue you're going to have with Green is kind of the question marks of, is he going to stay the closer this year? And how long is he going to be the closer, or will he get moved to somewhere else by the deadline?
Yeah, I think he's going to get shipped. I think Joe Jimenez is going to take over as the closer at some point. I think he's been tagged for that for about 3 years. I do like Green. Get you some saves. He could get you some cheap wins. He doesn't kill you in strikeouts because he gets a strikeout per inning. It's just those ratio numbers aren't going to be great, and they'll improve once he moves on to a different team, but he then won't get the saves. So if you're looking for some cheap, you know, Fernando Rodney type ERA numbers with cheap saves, and here's the place for you if you have the ability to offset it until he gets traded in late July.
Yeah, I think the play if you're drafting Green is that you hope the Tigers get off to a decent start. He can get you 10, 15 saves early, and then you get rid of him while he still holds a closer job.
Yeah.
Joe Jimenez, as you mentioned earlier, is probably the sexiest name inside of this bunch. Had 11.2 K per nine last year in 62 2/3, which is pretty nice. ERA still a little higher than you'd like to see for a guy that's striking at that many batters, but he has been kind of the closer in waiting for, probably 3 or 4 years now. As he's been, I don't even remember the last time he was actually a starter. So I think this is the guy that you look at. If you're in saves and holds leagues, I think he's a guy that's he's going to get pushed up a little bit because he is giving you a premium strikeout rate, and he will hold one job or the other at some point this year. I'm not certain where I'd be willing to take him, though, in just a straight saves league.
Yeah, you're probably not going to draft him in a straight saves league. You're probably going to take him as a pickup probably around the end of May. You can get some ratio numbers from him that and some strikeouts. You know, you're not going to really get wins or, you know, the one-off save probably, but you should know that you'll get him early enough that he could technically get traded sometime in June or early July, that it makes sense for you to grab him at the end of May, beginning of June, so that if he does, if Green gets traded, you at least have a job without having to run to the wire to get him.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. The other thing I would keep an eye out for is kind of looking at contending teams and looking for the first closer to go down, because that could signal the trade of Green moving to some other team. Yeah. Which is going to bolster Jimenez's value. The only other guy really I think that's worth mentioning inside of this bullpen group is Blaine Hardy. Blaine Hardy was a nice streamer option last year. Probably going to slot in as the Tigers' sixth starter. But given what he provided last year, there's a better chance, I think, that you get value from Blaine Hardy than you do from most of the Tigers' starters this year.
Yeah, there's a chance of that. I'm not really looking to go that deep into the starters. I mean, I have three different leagues that I have more than 20 teams in. So somewhere like that, he could be a useful streaming option. He's just not someone I'm looking to necessarily get. I'd almost rather look for one of these minor leaguers that they are absolutely stacked in the minors for. I'd rather grab one of them and hope that one of them comes up and they potentially start the clock. Like, at some point, Bo Burrows, I think, is up this year. Franklin Perez is still their best guy, but I don't think he's coming up this year. Matt Manning could be up. I think sometime by mid-next year, Mize, Perez, Manning, and Burrows are all up here. So I think that there's a chance that they're like, all right, well, we're bringing all these guys up. So,
yeah, I think there's some potential for that. I would be a little bit surprised just considering their window. Because they don't have any real reason to push these guys into the majors. I mean, Manning, I think, hasn't seen AAA yet. Mize hasn't seen
double A. Manning, Fido, Perez are all double A. Mize is high A, and Burrows was in triple A.
Yeah, so. Burrows, I think, is the most likely candidate to find himself in the majors here. And I would assume probably by mid-year. But I think between him and Fido, those are probably the bottom of the barrel for their starting pitching prospects when you think about that top five. The other three.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there's, like I said, middle of next year, it's a whole year away. They're closer. I think that there's a decent chance that all four of those guys are up, and potentially five. I think there's a chance that you have at least three of the five up by sometime middle of the 2020 season, just because at some point they can't just keep keeping their guys down in the minor leagues for just the sake of keeping them in the minor leagues. At some point they're going to have to say, we can push this contention window up now if we get two bats. And they may be able to do that in a year and a half.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Ben. Well, we should cut this one off. We probably talked long enough about a terrible team with not great players. So thanks for coming on today. One last time before we go, if you want to let everyone know where you can be found on Twitter.
Yeah, I can be found on Twitter at bbrennis, FWFB. And you'll be able to find me on other baseball podcasts and basketball podcasts. Basketball, unfortunately, hasn't been able to get off the ground as much this year just because we did have some new people come on board, and given the fact that some people don't have equipment for recording, it's made it a little tough for us to be able to get some shows, but we will be planning on doing some of those now that 2019 has rolled along and people probably got some stuff for Christmas. So,
all right, fair enough. And you can find me on Twitter at Andrew K. Dewhurst. I'm covering largely the other winter sport in hockey. Also haven't gotten the podcast going yet, but I'm hoping to get that moving in the next few weeks. And you will see me on probably a few more of these team preview podcasts. So thanks for coming on, Ben. And everyone have a fantastic baseball season.